Welcome to Live the Fuel.
Welcome to Live
Welcome
the Fuel.
To Live the Fuel. Focusing on health, business, and lifestyle. And now your host, Scott Mulvaney.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another Live the Fuel show. Today, we have a special guest, a special co-host. This guy I've known for many, many years now. We've been interconnected in many different lifestyle examples, just from mountain biking in our personal lives, but also professionally. We've had some of the same inner circle in the IT world, one of my past adventures professionally. And all of that has overlapped around mountain biking, road cycling, even some hiking stuff over the years back and forth. And I see this guy now as not just one of my best friends, also a mentor and a guide in life and in business. But we're going to talk a little bit about IT, a little bit about mountain biking. Who knows where this is going to go, because I've known the gentleman today here. His name is Simone Dorgum. He is the founder and owner of Singularis IT, and a big fan of their solutions and what they're doing for the online space. We're going to talk a little bit more about that as well. So without further ado, I forget how many years I've even known you now. So Simone, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott. Thank you.
All right, man. So how many years has it been?
Oh, dear God. Now we're aging ourselves, Ben.
Well, this is going to happen as the show grows.
It's
so
probably about 12 to 15 years.
Is it that long now?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I met you when I was working at iNetU.
You were my salesman.
Managed hosting, yeah. So
And I busted your balls then. I'm going to bust your balls today.
Exactly.
Too.
So there we go. It's all about ball busting. So I'm all right with it. I tell people all the time, like, dude, you're a co-host, so it's not just me, man. Like, share the responsibilities. We're going to throw this stuff back and forth.
Yeah, considering you got a big, giant blue ball on your chin. And
Hey, don't make fun of my microphone pad, okay? You got a black ball on your face. So
I know.
Quick microphone tip to those who are new to podcasting out there. If you ever are on an interview or trying to run your own show, if you're using proper dynamic mics, yeah, basically the microphone is supposed to, as they say, tickle your whiskers, or in this case, it's like a ball on your chin. So enjoy that while you guys are listening to this episode. So
everyone's here when they're not here.
So Simone, you and I go back, well, let's say 15 years, whatever it may be. I want to kind of rewind it for some people since they have no idea who you are. And it's hard for me to remember because I didn't know you in your youth. But you kind of started real, real young with the whole crazy tech world stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's
great. Even high school, right?
Yeah, I started when I was 15 years old.
So help us like kind of start from there, because I never really got a ton of information in my life about that anyway, as far as me knowing you. So it was some type of, is it kind of like one of those advanced student type programs? This isn't like a Votech school, because I went to a Votech school for microelectronics. Mm-hmm. So that's different. So what were you doing?
Well, I was, you know, when you're young, you know, you had the opportunity, or you typically wanted to make money and get things and et cetera. So when I was 15, the first major purchase was going to be a car. Obviously, you know, back where I grew up and our lifestyle and our family life, my parents were not buying me a car. I had to buy it myself. So basically it was do summer jobs and et cetera. And I did construction and grass cutting and et cetera when I was 13, the summers of 13, 14, 15. And I saw a guy fall off the roof in construction.
On the job?
On the job.
Okay.
And that pretty much told me right away that roofing is not for me, although I'm very good at, you know, using my hands and calculated decisions and calculations and et cetera, problem solving. That's when, you know, Hewlett Packard and AMD came out with their computers with the wonderful 3.5-inch floppy disks and,
oh, that's crazy,
and 5.25 floppy and et cetera. So, I mean, I basically saved enough money to buy a computer. And the first thing I did was, before I even turned it on, I took it apart. needless to say, I got beat because I spent
by the parents
by my parents.
Okay,
because I spent so much money on something, and the first thing I did was take a drill right to it.
Well, to be fair, it's not like you cut into the unit; you were just dismantling it to understand it more.
I wanted to understand how it worked.
Okay,
so therefore, before I even turned it on, that's just how I felt. And from there,
was it functioning when you were done that day?
No.
Oh.
No, so it cost me more money to get it fixed, but I learned, and that intrigued me on how you're taking this big, you know, at the time it was a beige box.
Was that one of the towers?
Yeah.
Or was this the horizontal stall?
Huge desktop tower. I mean, this thing was probably maybe a foot thick and it took up your entire desk.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. Everyone knows what those were like.
Well, what was the old I'm going to age myself now. We're talking pre.com. What was the BBS boards or bulletin boards? What were they called back then? Because my buddy used to do the same thing with computers.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I tell on the tip of my tongue.
They were called like BBSs or something, but it was bulletin boards, and that's how you were sharing information. Yeah. This is pre.
Yep.
It's crazy stuff. Yep. So this is 80s, 90s.
So, when the 56K modems and, then the 30, and I mean, it was just, you had your external modems and internal modems.
I was a dial-up boy. Yep. Stupid ringing sound and everything. Yep.
America Online, watching the guy run.
Everybody had to have their AOL CDs. Oh, my God, those CDs. Yes. I had so many of them.
Yep. That started my passion for, understanding my passion and my drive to understand what makes this thing tick. And
specifically
Specifically technology.
Okay.
Building, setting up, making it go faster, whatever the case may be. That's just, that's just how I am.
Oh, yeah. this carries, anybody who actually knows us in our personal life, this carries over into the biking world and everything else, which we'll get into.
I went to Derify School, and the only computer program we had was typing. And
yep,
I remember that.
Keyboarding class or whatever. We had that at Penargel.
Correct.
And a Tandy 1000s.
Yes, sir. Oh, God. Now we're really aging ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Monochrome monitors.
the physical mechanical keyboards.
We're not even that old, man. Like, that's how cool it is. Like, we're still in our 30s.
I know. But it's technology will date you, though.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's moving so fast, if you think about it. Off on a quick tangent. I mean, if you think about it, 6 years ago, what did we really have? We had the Motorola Razors.
Yes.
And
Nokia was a big player in the cell phone market.
Where are they now?
Yeah.
Now it's all Samsung if you don't have one that blows up and gives you fat insurance.
In the late 90s, I was testing every single PDA, personal device, before. This is pre-smartphone because there were still two separate devices.
Yep.
Everybody looked like Batman the Geek when you had like a pager, a cell phone, and a PDA clipped on your belt.
How about Nextel? I mean, then
the two
came Nextels and then... And then, BlackBerry came along and started really making the
crackberries.
Yep. And then Apple with their iPhones.
And the Hewlett Packard was the Jornada. I remember the HP Jornada. These were bricks.
Yep.
They were big touchscreen PDAs.
Yep.
So we're geeking out right now, guys. So back on
Derif. I mean, we only had a typing class, and that was basically it. I don't think there really was much from what I recall because it was very short-lived for me because I refuse to sit here and say, okay, well, here I am in a school district that has a ton of opportunity because Lucent Technologies was right down the street.
Yeah, and you're dead center. Well, you weren't downtown central Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
you were basically still major part of Allentown.
Yep, yep. Yeah. And, I mean, we had an opportunity to basically kind of say, okay, well, why don't we have this, but other schools in the Lehigh Valley do? So...
Oh, so other schools did have a program similar
did,
to what you
did have
doing.
Even just a computer lab. We didn't have any of that.
Okay.
We had a great woodshop class and a great electronics
so
class.
Did we.
And, yeah, but we didn't have
we
any.
We had drafting and woodshop.
Yeah, we had no computer lab, nothing.
Wow.
And so basically myself and Tim Billy, who was a teacher.
Okay.
Kind of like my mentor.
Is he retired now?
He's retired. He's actually back at NACAC right now.
Northampton Community College.
Yeah, teaching and stuff like that.
Anybody who's local to Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, we all call it NICNAC or NACAC, but it's NCC, Northampton Community College. It's actually one of the biggest
community colleges
on the East Coast.
That's correct.
So they have a great reputation.
Yes,
so he's teaching over there now.
He's teaching over there now.
Wow.
Yeah, small world.
It is a small world.
Still keep in contact with him.
I'll have to track him down online because we have very detailed show notes. So if he exists online, it'd be cool to link him into the notes. A little hint to my VA who does all that stuff. Thank you, Martin.
So I was basically a pain in his ass.
Okay.
Because I kept saying, why can't we have this? Why can't we do this? What do we need to do? Who do we need to call? What do we need to do? I was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, get sponsorship or something donated or whatever.
We had a little bit of a... I can't recall if it was a month or something to do with Lucent that had nothing to do with computers. It just was some sort of a go check it out type thing. And that was basically it. And I think it was trying to get them into Votech to go into electronics and chip making and all that
stuff. Oh, we were always chasing them too because I was going, God, I don't know what it was called back in the day. It might have been like Northampton Vocational Technical School over north of Easton, mm-hmm. which then later changed to CIT, Career Institute of Technology. But same thing. I was studying microelectronics, and we were always looking for any kind of hookup because I felt like we were just, I don't know, the outcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe that was the same thing with you. It was like that generation.
Yep. Yep.
So
basically, you know, Tim Billy, out of respect, Mr. Billy,
yeah.
You know, pretty much contacted Lucent and got us to sponsor and partner up for a computer lab.
Okay.
And so that is where the DIRF technology and science program started, because they didn't have enough kids for technology, but they had plenty of kids for science.
Interesting.
So Tim Billy and I were the first two people to basically, you know, student, teacher, and we were the first two to start the class. And within a couple of weeks, we had 15 kids, and it started to go and
go.
So
they were kind of cross-pollinating through the science side of it to see who had, like, that techie gene or who was really interested in that stuff?
Yep. So we took a couple of science kids, and it was a joint effort, you know, because we didn't have enough curriculum to get it done. And then Lucent took it a step further and allowed us to basically, after school, go to their facilities and learn, you know, for free on their dime.
That's awesome.
Which was awesome. I took advantage of that. And then I just basically bowed out of it and said, okay, well, this is kind of where I want to go, but you're not the company I even want to really be a part of.
Okay.
Because I just didn't really want to be a part of that type of corporate America at such an early age.
Well, and years later, they didn't do so well. So.
No, they did great.
They did great along the way, but there was a few big mistakes here in the Lehigh Valley over the years.
Yes.
So.
And that is basically where I decided to, at 15, I got my first quote unquote technology job, and that was at Total PC Solutions. His name is Bill Wood. They are no longer in existence today.
Okay.
You know, they
was that like a small computer store?
Small
type
computer
thing?
Repair shop.
Okay.
Off of Catasauqua Road, near the airport in the Lehigh Valley here.
Yeah.
And, I pretty much hounded Bill every single day, just like how I hounded, you know, Mr. Billy to get a program.
Where that is.
It's one of our close
friends.
You're
giving me flashbacks as far as where that location is. I'm like, I know exactly where that is.
the Richard Kroll Center, I believe, or whatever it is. And he finally gave me a job just to be a janitor, basically, is what I was.
We all got to start somewhere.
I cleaned the back room and the front showroom every single day. That place was freaking spotless.
Now, did
multiple
you do
times
that?
A day.
So, I mean, because I mean, we geek out on the whole. I geek out on the whole entrepreneurial stories and where things happen and why they're happening. So, did you target that specifically because you wanted to immerse yourself into that culture and just be surrounded by the technology, or was it just, hey, you already known at a young age, dude? I just got to get in there and just start doing any kind of work to prove myself. Like, what was all wrapped around that?
Well, I recognized between, you know, the lack of curriculums that the Allentown School District was providing at the time, because it was so early, and also what Lucent was showing us, I realized that, okay, I got to figure out if I want to go into actual chip making, electronics, chipboard design, and et cetera, or do I want to be a solder monkey, or do I want to be...
I learned how to be a solder monkey.
Yeah. or do I want to actually, you know, get into real computer, potentially networking...
Like the design.
Yes. The actual physical building, managing, maintaining, software, that different type of the technology world. And so the only way to do that was immerse yourself in a local company as their quote-unquote bitch.
Well, they were still figuring out what to even make their quote-unquote bitches do because there was no networking really established yet.
Correct. So I pretty much learned how to build computers and... You know, put them all together, order the parts and the whole nine yards, and then install the operating system back then, all through basically the trial and error. And after, you know, they're done with their work, and I would literally try to make a computer work out of their spare parts.
And, oh, that's cool.
And they were, and Bill Wood was totally okay with it because I was not touching a customer's stuff. I was using their junk.
So you were allowed to play with the scrap?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So whenever someone made an upgrade, I would put that into a box on the side.
Okay.
And I would eventually scrounge up enough parts to build the computer. And Bill allowed me to do that. And once he saw that I was able to make something out of nothing, out of their scraps, he then gave me the opportunity to start building their computers for customers. And then just kept going and going and going. And And here I am today. You know, I want to say, God, 20 years ago.
You play at a much bigger level now here.
Yeah,
so,
20 years ago, you know.
That's a kind of a big jump. I mean, now, just to chunk it out over the years, you've always had your side business. You always had your side hustle. It was not known as Singularis back then.
Correct.
When I got to know you, I was your sales rep because you were outsourcing the hosting requirements to, I don't know if all your requirements, but you were definitely, you had, because we, our boy Chris Grello was, still is one of their top, I don't even know what he does, everything. He's like a techie god to me. But you, I was a sales rep for your account. You were using all your, you were using their managed hosting facilities.
Correct.
I think you had your own server there, right?
Yep.
Okay. So now that was, God, that was 07, I think.
Yeah.
06, 07, 08 was that window when I was there.
Yeah,
and
it was definitely a while ago.
And that's when I was already mountain biking, but then meeting Chris, and then you guys invited me out to go road biking, made me have to go buy a road bike. And there's a whole other adventure story there. We can always even dig another episode, but long story short, guys, I became obsessed with road biking and very good at it. So I've been told anyway. To the point where you actually end up getting better at it too because of the competitive, mutual spirit.
It's like if you want to keep up with the rabbit, you got to chase him. So,
yeah.
You know.
Which we might get into some more of that here in the episode because there's a funny story behind some more of that in the modern day. But fast forward, when did you realize that you wanted to get into your own hosting solutions? Because that's kind of where you're at today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a piece of what you do with Singularis IT.
Yeah. 5 years ago, I was sitting Thanksgiving with my wife and my in-laws up at their house. And it was after, you know, the chaos and everyone's bellies are full and, you know, probably food drunk and food coma at the same time. I pretty much...
And 5 years ago, that's when I was out west firefighting.
Yep.
So I was missing all of this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so 5 years ago, I kind of... You know, get as you get the alerts on the on your phones and et cetera, you know, being in any sort of business role today and you have server services and et cetera. So getting all that stuff and I'm sitting here thinking to myself, here I am helping a company go from small X to very massive large X and still keeping their technology at a medium sized budget, but yet they're completely capitalizing off of it.
Right.
And I'm not getting anything out of it. Now, this is being a little selfish. You know, and let's just face it.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Everyone has a right to be selfish for their own, you know, well-being. There's nothing wrong with that. Just as long as you give back. So my whole thing was I want to be able to be selfish to be able to provide a better life for me with my knowledge and experiences from technology and business over the years. But I want to give back to the businesses that truly make our country, Middle America.
Okay.
And I got tired of seeing, you know, big business completely capitalize that and crush that all the time.
Okay.
Take major benefits.
Now, these are what you would consider some of your competitors today, or are you referring to other
competitors and some customers?
Okay.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with that, but as long as I can be the gatekeeper or I can be a person or a company that can provide somebody that is a Fortune 500 company services and et cetera. But yet you're just a new company that's just starting out and you're a new bloomer on your space or whatever space you want to do.
Right.
And I can give you the same services that you're going to get with the Fortune 500 company to empower you to basically create your widget and not worry about everything else, but only worry about selling your widget.
And I should note real quick here, I mean, for our listeners, again, Singularis IT, you actually, if you went to our resources page on the website, you'll notice that his logo's there because I actually am an affiliate of Singularis IT. I strongly believe in the solutions that Simone here has created and he's continuing to grow because it's not just the Fortune 500, right? You guys have the platform, if you will, to support the big players and the small players.
Correct.
So that's one thing that I thought was very interesting in how you decided to build this. Yes, a lot of people, when they decide their marketing and they decide their niche, it's like, oh, I'm going all big Fortune 500. But sometimes you end up standing on too heavy of a leg, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So is that part of your long-term, I guess, where you thought if Singularis was going to end up today, where it's where you're at right now, which is, yes, we have some big players, and we want the small and medium-sized players too, because that irons out the commitments to your systems, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, our range of, you know, customers, and really they're more along the lines of partners, but so therefore our range of customers/partners range from you can be a one-man shop to a two-person each mobile HVAC company utilizing, you know, our cloud services and technology services. And you can also, and it ranges all the way up to a household name, which are some customers that we have. And so technology is technology. Whether you're that small mom and pop shop or you're that massive Fortune 500 company, you're going to use it. You're going to need it. And it's all the same. It's just a matter of how you use it and what's available to you at an affordable number. Because that's bottom line. It needs to be affordable.
Well, and that's the cool thing. I mean, I know back when you first started telling me about Singularis well over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago now, you had really decided that, is this still, would you still consider this a platform as a service, as a title, or is it kind of grown beyond that? Because that's a niche as well.
Yeah.
So
the words are the niche is okay. Really, honestly, because it's almost like cloud. Okay.
Yeah, everybody uses the word cloud wrong.
Correct.
So
it's just a buzzword.
You're one of the people who taught me about that. So
I mean, our iPhones are clouds.
Yes.
I mean, so that's just a buzzword. Same thing as a service. You can pretty much in today's world, it's the catchiest thing out there.
Oh yeah. Well, SaaS, that's what made it all huge.
Correct.
And
so
for any of our listeners don't understand all this techie speak, software as a service.
Right.
If anybody's ever heard of Salesforce.com, huge SaaS platform.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have management as a service, you have software as a service, you also have, you know, infrastructure as a service or backup as a service.
Right.
You can pretty much, in today's technology world, you can pretty much turn anything into a service.
Sure.
And the whole point behind it isn't to just say, oh, I'm going to pay somebody monthly and everything is away or nothing is physically here. It's a business decision. You made the decision that you, how can I really relay this, I guess? You made the decision to operate off of an OPEX perspective rather than a CAPEX perspective. So basically, if you want to have, for example, your infrastructure as a service, okay,
mm-hmm.
you now don't have to capitalize your equipment anymore. You
right.
don't have to shell out
you
the money.
You don't take on the overhead.
Correct.
And the fact that the equipment has to be replaced every few years anyway.
Correct.
Well, not even every few. It's what?
Correct.
I don't know. What is the life cycle of a server nowadays?
It depends on how you use it, but it's typically 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you can stretch them out to about five, but it's typically three.
Well, I was explaining this to another podcast friend of mine the other day, and I was like, dude, like, why would you buy the hardware, then have the concerns of a single point of failure on site? Great, you put in your own cooling and stuff like that. But again, the whole point of data centers is that they have the redundant cooling, they have the redundant power.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to decrease the risk of downtime while increasing your availability.
Yep.
So,
well, do you want to manage blinking lights or do you want to manage selling your widget?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If you're a company that got into the business to sell lights, for example, then mm-hmm. great, sell your lights.
Yep. Don't worry about managing the blinking light that is in the server closet that you have no clue what to do other than push the power button.
Well, and the best thing I love about your solution is that just from a scalability perspective, that's why I love it, because like there's going to be people who listen to this who maybe are the small upstart, you know, startup entrepreneur, or you are maybe somebody who is connected to a Fortune 500 client. And the one thing I love about your solution is that, like, I know when you deal with high traffic clients, like I think you have connections with Shark Tank show and stuff like that, or people that have been on that show, I should say. But they... sometimes you just gotta be able to like literally click the button, dial it up, and get ready for a product launch.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, most companies who have their own hosted solution have nowhere near the resources to figure that out.
That's correct.
Yeah, like, okay, how are you gonna get ready for that? And how often do we hear about people's websites crashing because they
mm-hmm.
got slammed with traffic because of a viral blog post, or you know, your product all of a sudden got featured on somebody's, you know, website or whatever, and you had no idea that
mm-hmm.
you were actually ending up on that person's site, and all of a sudden there's thousands of pieces of traffic slamming your site.
Yep.
And now you're like hands up in the air, and next thing you know, you're spending thousands of dollars on consulting fees because you have no clue what
mm-hmm.
just happened.
Yep.
And how you're going to address it.
So you just basically lost money in multiple ways. I mean, you now have less sales because your site was down because you can't sell anything.
Yeah.
And now you also have frustration, you know, in regards to that. Now you have downtime, and the downtime then is also causing you more money to possibly bring it back up. And you're also, that's not what you're supposed to do.
No.
You're supposed to go sell your widget. Yeah. You know, and you're supposed to be the expert of your widget.
Well, so that's what I like about what you're doing is because, like you said, you've become a whatever question mark as a service. Like you can do a lot of different things for mm-hmm. the clients. So that's what I love the show Shark Tank because not everything on that show is great, but I love the story of the entrepreneur struggling and then all of a sudden they got something that clicks and they got the investors and boom, stuff's moving. But you know, you go on a television show like that that's being watched by millions of people, you're going to get some website traffic. Mm-hmm. And those people will have no clue what they're getting themselves into.
Correct.
Unless they had a really good consultant from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But more often than not, that was not happening.
No.
And the cool thing about the way you've built your solutions, because I don't know, I haven't even physically been to where you have your servers and hardware and how it's all built, but it's all scalable. Like you literally at the click of a button can dial somebody up and dial somebody down on resources.
Yep, we can actually do it. Some customers want to have a manual interaction with that.
Yeah.
And we can do it based on traffic. So in other words, if we know that you're operating at X, let's just say, 5%.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, we notice the traffic automatically going to 60. We can automatically spin up additional resources to load balance that. So therefore, you don't have any issues.
Yeah.
And we'll move your customers over onto the new stuff.
So here's a great example then. So I'm actually having lunch with a guy this Friday. He's a loyal follower of the show, and I know he'll hear this. And he's local, actually. But he said, I've got these ideas about, buying into a franchise. Or taking what that franchise he's already seen about that, maybe making his own version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually for the biking related world. So he's just a fellow biker guy. But I told him, like, listen, be ready to outsource as much as you possibly can. I know in the beginning for entrepreneurs, it's about saving money, but being smart where your money's being spent. So I guess if there's other listeners out there relating to that type of scenario, like, how would you wrap their head around what we're talking about right here? Without blowing them away from tech speak. I mean, how can we help them understand the whole importance of not every host can do this?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's important. Like, let's relate it to GoDaddy and HostGator.
Okay.
Very big names.
They're typically, static. So therefore, you pay for what you need and you pay for what you get. And there's a lot of manual.
And you have to know what you need because
correct.
That's how you purchase
most of
the account.
You don't. Correct.
Yeah.
So the way we would do it or the way I would, consult, a new customer coming on board, whether you have existing information or you are completely, white bear.
Okay.
You have no clue. We're basically going to ask a couple key questions in regards to what's your upcoming events? What do you plan on doing? Are you going to do some marketing efforts? Because those actually tie into what we need to do for a scale-up feature or a scale-up faction. So
okay.
We can start you out really small. And that way, then you can keep your monthly reoccurring costs relatively low. And then as you need the resources, it can automatically scale up and you pay for those resources when that traffic comes on. And if we notice that the traffic starts dying down, just scale it right back to where it was. So
and your systems are tracking all that because mm-hmm. you know what's being utilized.
Correct.
And when we talk about traffic, people, we're also talking about if you're starting to pick up on the tech world, speak bandwidth, for
mm-hmm.
example. Like there's a certain amount of bandwidth that your traffic is utilizing.
Correct.
So you have systems in place that are tracking all this.
Yep.
Now, it's not automatic, right? Like all of a sudden the site gets slammed. Is there an automatic, like, dude, that site needs traffic. It's automatically going to support it to prevent the site from crashing?
We can build an algorithm within our, within our infrastructure based on your, traffic coming in and traffic going out. So we can easily reroute it and we can easily scale it up and scale it down or whatever the case may be based on your requirements and needs.
So I think it's something really cool, not to geek out heavily on this, but I think it's important for people who are listening because you might be a health junkie or a fitness junkie listening to this show because we're obviously here to talk also about health and lifestyle with the domains that I've been going with my episodes here. But you might 6 months from now realize you're so passionate about nutrition you work with or the gym you have, like this might be literally become an entrepreneurial part-time thing for you. And you're like, you need to understand stuff like this or work with companies like this who understand how to help you grow. And the thing I like about your model that you explained to me, and I don't know if we can share it on the show here, but like when you onboard a client,
mm-hmm.
I've never heard of another host doing this, but can you share how you onboard them when it comes to resources and all that stuff? Is that something that's
Yeah. That
we've talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. So in other words, let's just say you come in at, one virtual server with X number of storage.
Something like me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have crazy traffic yet.
You have one virtual server with X number of storage.
Okay.
And you need X number of resources to host your site or your back office software.
Or my other sites I have.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. We'll put you on there and we'll immediately have 50% resources available on tap on demand without any sort of auto scheduling or auto tiering available for you. So in other words,
now that's become a policy of yours, right?
It's one of our policies.
Every new customer, no matter how big or small they come on,
yep.
You're, I don't want to say buying. Is it? Are you buying? Well, not really buying. It's your investment.
It's our investment. So therefore, we're investing into you as well. We're anticipating that our customer, meaning you, is going to grow. So therefore, I want to be able to have those resources available for you. So therefore, your business can grow 50% within our infrastructure automatically all the time. That's just a gimme.
Yeah.
But we typically have more than 300 or 400% resources available, if not in some cases, you know, a couple thousand percent resources available on top of what you currently have or need.
So we're kind of bringing this full circle back to your comment earlier here when you said you wanted to be able to invest in that, I don't want to say middle America, what your exact words were, but that whole, that business growth concept. And I guess because I used to work in the hosting world and you were one of my customers, I don't know of a lot of companies doing it that way.
No, they typically buy the requirements and resources after the purchase order comes through.
Okay.
With us, the purchase order is pretty much you pop in a ticket or you make a phone call to your account rep.
Yeah.
And within 15 minutes, the resource is available for you to utilize.
Now, do all of your customers get that algorithm feature built in where it's like you're sensing where, it, you know, hey, there's going to be some traffic slamming or things are changing or whatever?
Well, we do that actually because of right sizing as well. So in other words, if we notice, for example, you're paying, let's just say $5,000 a month for all these resources, and we're noticing that you're only using 25% of it, any company wouldn't say anything. Okay, most companies won't because that's like a free money aspect.
Yeah.
But with us, we'll actually reach out to you and say, hey, Scott, we've noticed for the past 2 months, you have not used the anywhere near the resources that you're paying
for.
Not
even 50% utilized, right?
Yeah. I think we should right-size you. Or are you having, you know, are you having trouble?
Define right-sizing. So
basically scale you back down so that way your bill gets cheaper, but you still have the same resources of what you need.
So when people sign a contract with you, let's say they said, yeah, I know I'm going to need this because of what we've done in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say the $5,000 a month contract. I'm guessing, so your contracts aren't based on a set dollar amount then. It's based on utilized resources.
Correct.
So it may start that way, but then once they're on your solution, you're going to come back to them and be like, actually, you're wrong, or you're wrong, right?
Well, I mean, they either could be wrong, we could have been wrong, or we're both right, or there's something wrong with their business that they may not be doing very well.
Okay.
Bottom line is, business changes day to day, okay?
Yeah.
And if you're in as a SaaS model, okay, whether it's as a service model, I should say, you need to be able to have that particular.
We should call it the ass model because that we don't have the first letter in front of it.
That's true.
a service.
Basically, it comes down to, you know, you need that to be nimble and flexible, okay, because business changes day to day.
Okay.
And you may have a great month and you may have a horrible month. You may have a horrible couple months. So why are you going to pay for things if you're having a really horrible month or two? Let's scale back the resources so that way you can reallocate those monies to continue to grow the business
need it. You grow the business, you will need those resources.
Correct.
So that's the whole point.
Then we can re-add it.
Okay.
And it's not a problem. But why pay for it if you're not using it?
That's a good point.
I'm a firm believer of that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be the vendor, you know, or just another vendor that you're paying for.
Well, and I think the most important thing is because I know from me being obsessed with the podcasting world is that you don't know when your podcast show is going to blow up. You don't know when it's just other people who are listening to this who have online business. Maybe you're running webinar programs. Maybe you're a webinar provider, whatever. But you don't know. You can predict. You can try and predict. But how? It's kind of hard to predict what your site traffic is going to be or what your resource allocation is going to be.
The only way you can do that is based on previous history. And in my opinion, you always err on the side of caution on previous history.
Okay.
So let's just say you had 1 million records or 1 million hits in your site off of a last airing that you did nationally. Okay, well, that's because maybe you had no exposure.
And
that's
a lot of records. That might have been, what, 48 hours of spike?
Correct.
That's not year-round utilization.
So therefore, if you're doing it again, and you're obviously going to switch something up, but you want to err on the side of caution. You may do something better, or it may be worse, but you want to be prepared for the worst, meaning you don't want to just scale up exactly what you did last time. You want to actually scale up with a few more resources in the event of, just in case, you know, you may have blew this one out of the water.
Right.
You want to be prepared for that.
So this is kind of important for like online companies that do shopping or selling, for example, mm-hmm. and like, hey, it's like you have that Black Friday time of year here in the USA. You have the Christmas season.
Even like, podcasts, like as your podcast business, you know, gets a little more known, a little more successful, and you know, NFL radio and all those guys, same thing. Those yeah. guys,
NPR's launching their own yeah. episodes. They got everybody. Yeah. All the big players are coming in.
When their loyal listeners and followers know that they're going to have a new podcast show available, take a look at your stats, if your hosting company can provide you that.
Right.
Take a look at your stats, and from the time you launched it to the time you reached out to the customer and told them that, hey, I have a new show, come download it. Track that event for 48 hours, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll see what you really need. And then take a look at that and then capitalize on that. Look at it for the next segment and just start scaling up automatically.
Well, I think the other thing is it's not just that, but it's like, it depends on my co-host. I mean, every one of my co-hosts have different followings.
Mm-hmm.
When I brought on the new, well, now I guess he's considered an author, but the veteran Noah Galloway, I mean, mm-hmm. he's got a huge following from Dancing with the Stars and the Tough Mudder world and him being a, you know, amputee war vet.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know what was going to happen when I aired his episode. I was obviously, hopefully, a lot of response because I was trying to help him sell his new book, Living with No Excuses. People, check it out because he's awesome. But I was really proud of that episode because I didn't know where that was going to go. And that was a pretty big name for me because the show is barely over 2 months old now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's important because that's a great example there. I don't know what episodes are going to spike, what are not. You have goals, you have expectations, mm-hmm. but are you on the right solutions that are going to ensure that that's going to stay, I guess, even keeled as far as traffic and utilization.
Well, yeah, utilization, bandwidth. I mean, I know a lot of hosting companies will charge you for bandwidth.
Right.
And how do you really know what bandwidth, how do you properly budget yourself for that?
I have no clue.
Admittedly, you don't know.
All the webinars that I studied before I launched this show, they said, and this goes for any business guys, not just podcasters, for you guys who are listening out there, anybody who might be trying to do something in the online space, it's just as simple as you are literally kind of taking a guess. Most of the podcasts say, you know what, like Libsyn is a media host for podcasters. So they said, listen, just set up a basic account, start with like $20 a month, they get you a certain amount of bandwidth, and then you can start tracking it and see where you end up. And I'm like, it's a giant guessing game. But obviously that's how they've designed their model for them.
Right.
So, but then, I don't know, it's crazy. So,
like, we don't charge bandwidth. We don't charge it, and everyone's flabbergasted about that because...
I've mentioned it a couple times when I was out at the Thrive event in San Diego, everyone and people were like, I don't understand how that's possible. And I'm like, I'll have to let Simone explain that.
It's easier not to charge it than to sit here and charge it. I mean, there's a big, crazy algorithm that we have to write and do and figure out, and bottom line is, how can you truly dispute that? So
true.
Why am I going to charge you for something that you can't even figure out how to dispute?
Well, and the point, you guys are tracking, because your whole environment... Is it, am I using the right word, virtual? Yeah. Everything is virtual, right?
For the most part. There's a lot of dedicated stuff as well, but
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But everything is a virtualized environment.
All right. So all of your software or your stuff that you guys have in place tracks not just the bandwidth, but how much hard drive space is being mm-hmm. utilized, how much RAM, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So to be fair, you guys don't need to track bandwidth because you also know from the other stats exactly what people are needing.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, our monitoring systems will tell us exactly what's going on. 99% of the time, we know, almost 100% of the time, we know of a problem before even the customer knows there's a problem.
Okay.
And, you know, we're more of a, you know, proactive company than a reactive company.
Yeah.
But you have to be very good at being reactive as well, because let's just say one of the household, you know, name customers goes down, or their site goes down due to a denial of service attack because somebody wants to be malicious.
There's a lot of that out there now.
That's like normal today. We get those stuff on a daily basis. And
real quick, guys, explain in layman's terms what a denial service attack is.
It's basically, imagine a cattle chute, you know, and you're trying to shove, you know, the cattle chute or the
like
highway.
Like in Texas, you got 1,000 head of cattle coming
running
down.
Trying to come into the doorway.
Oh, so basically people simulate thousands and thousands of hits of traffic to try and crash your site.
Correct. And the scaling services on the back end.
It's very malicious. That's not nice.
So imagine, you know, the typical rule of thumb is you build your system to handle 1,000 concurrent users a day or whatever the case may be.
That's what you hoped for as a business owner.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's their stats. That's their daily stats. They know that's what they a average out on the course of a day.
Okay.
This denial of service attack will try to give it 10,000.
Wow.
On top of that 1,000.
And a lot of time, that's just people who are bored or
it's either
hackers.
A bot. It could be a bot. It's a bot. A hacker. It's somebody that's bored.
Okay.
Or it's just some kid in
I'm not trying to scare listeners who are trying to get into the online business space. I think it's just important to educate people that this is normal nowadays. Like, you know, my girlfriend's got a veterinary business. She's got a website. If somebody got bored one day, they could do that to her site, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean,
now her site's on, I don't even know where it is. I think it's on HostGator, I think. But like, if that happens, what would happen in the HostGator world? She's probably on a shared hosting environment.
Yeah, it would go down. HostGator would either, you know.
But not just her, right?
Everybody.
Anybody who's in that environment with her.
Correct. In a shared environment, everybody would go down.
Okay.
And HostGator would basically start their DDoS mitigation services, which is denial of service mitigation services. And you're at the liberty of, like, you never know. I mean, so if you are in a high trafficked environment and you know you're a public figure or whatever the case may be, your hosting company or your technology partner should know and help you mitigate those services, whether you need them or not. It's like an insurance policy.
Okay.
So we put in those measures right away. We make those recommendations. And if it comes down to cost, we also help you with that as well, because we know that if you don't do it, that risk could be very bad. It could be very, very costly for you.
Well, like that one company I met in San Diego last week, they're like a webinar platform that I'm checking out. They're Thinkific.
Mm-hmm.
I sent him your information because I'm intrigued by what they do. They're all about teaching, helping people grow their online education platforms and webinar platforms, which are very, very big in the online business now. It's like, oh, you want to grow a brand online? Start teaching people things.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed like one thing that he was very intrigued by was because you also do security assessments on people. Like,
we do.
And again, I'm not, for our listeners, I'm not trying to turn this into a giant like sales pitch thing. I think it's just important for people to understand that don't be afraid to get into the online space, but also try and get a little educated. I'm hoping to teach you guys a few things with this episode because I'm always learning stuff from Simone too. And I think people do need to know, like, dude, there's stuff out there that could really rock your world and crash your business before it even takes it off. Yep. So like, why is security assessment so important?
Well, it also tells you where you are from a technology standpoint.
Who built your site? Is the code strong?
Yeah, is the code strong? Who built your site? Is your back office software secure? Are you HIPAA compliant, even though you may or may not be?
Medical industry.
Yeah, are you PCI compliant?
Online shopping with credit card storage.
Correct. I mean, all this stuff, you need to be ahead of your customer, okay? Not just, I'm talking about, let's just say I'm company XYZ.
Okay.
And I sell bottles. You need to be ahead of the customers who are buying your bottles.
Okay.
Because they may or may not come to you, not just because maybe your product is great or whatever. Some companies or some people will come to you because you have a phenomenal secure solution. They know that if they type in their credit card information, it's not going to get stolen.
Well, the funny thing is most people think, well, as long as I have my little certification logo on the bottom of the website, that's going to give people peace of mind.
Yeah, it doesn't
matter. I mean, I own one of those for a site that I'm not even using anymore. I think it's finally expiring because I don't really need to use that.
But that's only like 10% of what you really need to do for security-wise. I mean,
right.
You know, there's a lot of security assessments that, you know, we can do or we can help you guys do and educate you on how to make your site.
Well, you pretty much do some of this in the beginning before anybody even comes in your environment anyway, right?
Well, yeah,
you
got to
protect yourself.
Absolutely, we have to. Well, we want to protect them to protect us. I mean,
okay.
So we've turned away customers that they were just their programs and their sites were just so insecure that we will not put them on our platform.
So let's kind of crunch this real quick. So just a hard hitting session. If I bring up three people, a beginning entrepreneur online, or let's say somebody local here in Lehigh Valley with an online presence who might be looking at you, compared to a mid-sized business that you had mentioned earlier, and then like the Fortune 500. Is there one thing that you've seen consistent across all of those three that is a big faux pas or mistake or like an opportunity to improve?
Yeah. They don't know enough about what they need.
Oh, okay.
Seriously.
It's a lot of like throwing darts in the dark like at a target. It's like you don't know where it's going.
They think they need this or they think they need that or they think they know that.
All right. But that's a lot of waste of money, I'm guessing.
They waste a lot of money. I really recommend that all entrepreneurs, all owners, CEOs, CFOs, understand what you're really paying for and what you really need. Don't just go off of buzzwords like cloud.
Okay. Oh, everybody wants to be on the cloud now.
Yeah, I mean, you may or may not need it. Yes, I would love to have everybody on our cloud platform.
Sure.
Or our hosting platform or managed services platform. But you may not need it. So why
are you going to have it? Because literally as a business, if I had 20 people and I was trying to launch a virtual business so people could work out of their houses, all I need is an access point.
Correct.
They would log in from any of their personal computers with probably a firewalled type access.
Yep. Like dual factor authentications for security. Yeah. So that way you know your employee that who is remote is truly utilizing a safe connection.
Yeah. That's up to me if I wanted to use like a key fob system or whatever that had a changing
key
passcode.
Key fob or a VPN client that is dedicated with a secure token in it.
So basically, I could have people log in from any computer anywhere to my company, to their user profile.
And work from anywhere
Microsoft,
in the world.
Word, Mac, Windows, doesn't matter.
Whatever runs your business, yes, correct. And you can have them, let's just say they're on medical leave. Theoretically, they could work from home. Let's just say you have bad weather. You can work from home.
Okay.
We've actually helped companies, some of our customers, who were a little skeptical about, oh man, this is going to be, I'm going to pay
a lot of money.
$12,000 a year, $24,000 a year, whatever their number is, where I can go buy this maybe for $12,000 or $15,000 one time, and then I know I got to pay for maintenance after the fact. But therefore, they try this. They believe in it. And we help them change the culture, and they actually get a lot more work out of their employees after hours because
they're free to log in whenever they want.
They're free to log in whenever they want.
Yeah.
So in other words, like everybody has a lull in their day after, you know, after they eat dinner.
I think that's important nowadays because people are trying to find more life balance, and these new modern companies are getting rave reviews because they're saying, I only make my employees work 5 hours a day. I forget who that guy is, but that was really, really a popular thing. Like 4 days a week, 5 hours a day. And people are like, and his company has grown. But I think because what they're not telling you is, yes, they only have to be in the office, so to speak. I'm doing air quotes again. People who are listening can't see this. 5 hours a day, 4 days a week. But they're probably doing hopefully something virtual, meaning that these people now have the freedom. So, you know, if I want to put extra work into my project, I can do that at any point in time I want.
Correct. So, in other words, I mean, if you think about it, the majority part of your day is work.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we're already bred to pretty much work, and you're already driven to do work. So you wake up, you do your thing, you go to work. You're there for 8 hours, and then you come home. You may or may not make dinner. You come home. You do whatever you do when you get home, okay, or whatever you do after work.
Yeah.
Then you have a bit of a downtime, or you may have a great idea, and you want to focus on something right now for your job.
Right.
To help you, to help the company, to help something, okay, or do something. You'd like to be able to log into, you may or like to be able to log into work. You don't have to go to back
and,
to the
and
office.
And if your company doesn't want to buy everybody ThinkPads or you know, hardware like laptops, to be fair, they don't have to.
Correct. That's like bring your own device.
Yeah.
You can use your own device.
So I could literally go
to
like
it.
A public library. Well, I don't know if the public library would be locked. If it's online, it's the internet. You might even be able to do it from a public library computer.
Correct. I mean,
depending.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely lock a lot of things down depending for the customer, you know, in regards to that. So you need to know some things.
Sure.
But you will be able to do what you need to do from anywhere at any time.
Well,
you
I think it's security. Like, okay, what if you got, like, companies, well, any kind of company trade secrets.
Mm-hmm.
You're in an airport. How many times you hear about people's laptops getting stolen in an airport? Well,
yep.
Good luck, because they could steal a laptop. But even if the company issued me a laptop and my laptop got stolen,
yeah, there's no
if
data
I'm
on
using
it.
Your virtual interface, they can open the laptop, correct. But there's nothing on the laptop.
Correct. They just
it was
stolen
just
a physical piece of asset. That's
yeah,
it.
It was just a portal.
Correct. Your data is not on your physical device. Everything is in a secure, remote environment.
So quick peace of mind for me if I'm seeing this happen and I know this happened. To be fair, even if I reported it, they don't even have to rush to try and, I guess, get it.
The likelihood of you
down,
getting
right,
yeah, correct. No,
they say,
no.
Oh, you know, I'll shut down tomorrow.
Yeah,
like well, unless my key fob was in the laptop bag or something too. Like then you might want to.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah,
I mean,
you might want to call help desk and get that report a little faster, because that's something else too. Like, I just love the service platform because if I'm a small business and let's say I got a techie buddy who's helped me start up my company, I want to be able to say, you know what, we're a small business. I can't afford my entire IT team or the old terms of a manager of IS versus IT, whatever you want to call it nowadays. So it's like, great, I don't need to because I can just have my main, even maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm wearing all the hats right now in my business.
Well, you guys are awesome.
Like that second tier, like that, I don't know what you guys call that. What is that second tier of support that you guys are providing?
Oh, it's like our I guess, I mean,
it's
theoretically,
kind of a la carte. You guys tweak it to fit the customer, right?
Yeah, I mean, what we do is we tend to try to really know what you do and what you need to do.
Well, what I'm referring to is how like some companies' IT guys probably won't support you because they think they're going to lose their job. But in reality, they're not losing their job because you prefer that the dude stays there at that company because he knows what they need.
He becomes a phenomenal coordinator.
Yeah, you're just, as like I said, you're kind of like that second tier. You're his...
We're his support.
Right.
He's dictating it. Yeah. We're just helping him get further along with things that he couldn't do because...
You've just gained more resources.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Not just from the technology standpoint, but now from a support level as well.
Yep. And then he can also know, I mean, in some cases, he may have to budget. Now he just freed up his budget because he doesn't have to do a lot of capital expenditures.
So that IT dude is now like the hero because he's able to do a lot more than he ever did before.
Yep.
Only because of that service relationship.
Correct. Perfect example is like... Okay, you're able to spend, you have $100,000 a year that you're able to spend on technology.
Yeah.
You know, for simple math. Okay. And every single year you got to spend $100,000. Okay. To get your budget back. In some cases, it's a use it or lose it type.
I heard of some companies doing that. Yeah.
Correct. So wouldn't you like to be, and more importantly, if you stay under budget, you probably get a bigger bonus or whatever the case may be. You know, speaking for the guy that works at that company. And wouldn't it be great to be able to advance your company's technology for a quarter of that budget on an annual basis and you stay within that budget all the time? You're getting the best of the best. You don't really have to maintain it. And then the best part about it is you can take the remaining three quarters of that budget and apply it to something that will better help you to better help the company. Okay. So in other words, you can give that back to a different, you know, department to help you add another piece of technology to pick up paperclips. Okay. Document management.
Sure.
You know, things that will really advance the company that you're working for, or it's your company.
Well, it goes back to your point earlier. Instead of having a hard budget of, let's say, $20,000 a year, when once you're monitoring the systems, you're realizing, like, guys, you're only using about $10,000 worth of resources. So we're going to scale it back.
Correct.
Yeah.
Why pay for it?
Okay.
So, I mean, you gain a lot more with you know, enterprise companies or companies like us.
I wish I was like that with our bike expenses.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. I had to make that transition, dude, because it's like, if we could do that in biking, that'd be great. I'm like, listen, I want all this. But actually, no, I wouldn't want them to take it away, though. I guess it doesn't really connect because we do want the toys.
No, it's just the problem with biking is everything is a capital expenditure, especially when a good friend owns a bike shop that... It makes it like so easy to just give him a call and be like, just take care of it later.
Have we put Andy on your solution yet? That's right. We're shouting you out, Andy, from Pedal in Littleton, Colorado. We've all bought bikes from you, so
multiple bikes.
Yeah, well, you especially. You're obsessed. So I was gonna say to listeners, we've been talking so much computers and so much technology, which is important because Singularis IT is awesome. And like I said, they are on the resources page on the website for Live the Fuel, or you just go to singularisit.com directly. It doesn't matter. But I think it's important to understand some of that. I don't know. I think it's kind of funny how you overinvest in your company and your resources for your customers, and you're basically doing the same thing in your personal life. So there's clearly a personality consistency there because me, I got the same road bike that I started using when we all started road biking together.
Yeah,
but my mountain bikes, I've definitely been upgraded over the years. So,
But how many people do you know hit a deer and kill the deer with their bare hands?
That is an awesome story, by the way. So we had to add a little punch to the towards the end of the show here because this friggin' guy, I was out of town. Normally, I'm leading the ride. I don't know where I was. I can't remember. I think it was upstate. You were on my normal business trips, and you were out with Stewie.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm going to see him this Monday. He's my dentist. And shout out to the Godfather. And you guys decided to go on a road bike ride without me, which is fine. That's okay. I don't feel any miss, but I'm glad because normally I'm leading the ride.
That would have been you hitting that deer.
You were leading the ride, and yep. you decided to T-bone a freaking deer.
Yeah,
so
it just popped out right in front of me. So yeah. imagine going, you know, 37 miles an hour. Which
oh, did you have the exact speedometer on that?
Yeah, I did.
I knew it was 30 plus.
Yep. Okay. The speed limit on the road was 35. I was doing 37.
That's still within legal speed limit, people.
Yep. So I was not breaking the law yet. But and next thing you know, a deer just pops out in front of you, just like in a car.
Well, it was just like the one weeks before that with the damn groundhog that ran out in front of me, right?
That's right.
You're behind me going, "Whoop!" And I was like, "Yeah, that just happened." So
I think you bunny hopped that thing. I mean,
I think I had to. There was no way I was going to hit it. That was crazy. So road biking is dangerous, people. It's fun, but it can be dangerous to what he's talking about right now.
Yeah. So I mean, this deer popped out in front of me, and I squared.
You locked him up. So Stu claimed,
yep.
right?
I did lock him up.
I don't know how much speed you really lost, though. It's you got skinny tires trying to grab pavement. You're not going to slow down that much.
No. I mean, I may have gone from 37 to, you know, 32.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? It was so it was so fast. It was a matter of like feet.
Yeah.
And I recall.
You know what? For the photos for this episode, we should put in one of your trauma shots that aren't as gruesome.
Oh, dude, I don't know.
That's up to you, man. It's all about how transparent you want to be. That's part of who you are, dude.
We can show.
Remember,
the bike.
I'm a personal branding guy. I'm telling you, I think that's awesome.
I don't think I want my bare ass out there.
No. Yeah, I was gonna say this freaking guy sent me photos of some scrapes and blood and everything else. One of them involved his butt cheek. So he was definitely we've known each other a long time. It's all good, people. But. That was crazy, though, because let's say you're easily over 30, hitting the deer. I think you dropped the shoulder into it.
I did.
I think you dropped the deer.
I did. I took it out.
Took out the deer, destroyed the bike.
Yep. Cracked the,
that was a
cracked
full
the
carbon
fiber. Frame in yeah. half, basically.
Yeah. Photos of that are great.
Yep.
Technically, could have freaking died.
I shouldn't be walking, you know, and I could have died. I mean.
Yeah.
Because of the impact. I mean, I'm 200 pounds. You know, so imagine a fat little bowling ball.
Simone is a very strong, you know, made in the USA Syrian guy.
I'm vertically challenged, and I'm 200 pounds.
You're not vertically
pounds.
Challenged. You're just a strong, stout man.
Dude,
How about that?
I am vertically challenged, all right? I'm vertically challenged, and I'm a little wide, all right? So imagine that at, you know, 30-plus miles an hour hitting a deer, and the first thing I recall is, you know, the hair in the face from the deer.
Sure.
And the next thing is, the last thing I recall
was the car, right?
No, actually, the looking at the deer upside down with my back and the back of my head impacting the ground.
Oh, you had flipped end over end in the air.
Yep.
So now your eyes are pointing back up
Correct.
The road at the deer, and you're about to land on your back.
Yes. And the first impact was on my back, and that was the last thing I remember.
Yeah.
You know, at the impact, then I recall Stewie, you know, Godfather, smacking, you know, his hands in front of my face, begging to God I was still alive.
Well, you know, Stu's a doctor of dentistry, and among many other leadership traits in his life, we all love Stewie. Also, a great guy to wake you up from hitting a deer.
Still the best is, you know, when he's calling my wife and saying, you know, he's okay. It's not that bad.
That's how he started the phone call over the phone. Yeah, you don't tell a man's wife, "Hey, it's okay." I'm like, you don't start the conversation
that
way.
He doesn't look that bad.
Yeah. And what was her response?
Okay.
What are we talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, when she arrived at the scene, there was the roads closed. There was.
And this was, you were lucky because normally she travels a lot.
Correct.
So she happened to be in town.
Correct.
So I'm sure she actually probably would have preferred not to be in town that day.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. So what would you say would be I don't know, man. We never talked about this. Like, how would you connect that back to you and your business and everything you're doing? Like, you and I talk a lot about, we try and get deeper into our lives a little bit. That's just how I think mature friendships should get to that point.
I use cycling as my, how can I say it? Cycling, lifting, you know, things like that, you know, being active. I use that as my think time.
Yeah.
Because even though, yes, I'm with you and we're riding and, or, you know, we're hiking or whatever.
Our brains do stuff differently during that
correct.
Time.
You know, we're collaborating. I'm bouncing ideas off of you.
Yeah.
A lot of ideas actually for my business have come from my friends. Maybe by me, you know, silently dropping some ideas and they're helping me, you know, put together a new path or something, whether it's for my life or yeah. for my marriage or for, you know, finances
but
or
it's like
whatever.
It's stress-free correct. Research correct. Because you're relaxed. You're doing something you love.
Because our businesses are so intense.
Yeah.
You know, our jobs are always intense. Everyone's job is intense and it's very stressful. So I strongly encourage everybody to find something that helps them de-stress, that you can truly be zoned within your own zone.
Yeah.
And just do it. Give it your all. Make it a second job.
Well, we joked around, naked ass cheek aside and everything else for the photos you shared with me, but you got pretty jacked up, dude. You were out for 8 weeks, right?
Yeah, 8 weeks. I fractured two ribs, partially collapsed lung.
You got to pick out a photo for the website. So I will. I mean, do our listeners right here. I mean, it doesn't have to be the butt cheek one. Maybe the ladies might like that, but just
I'll give you the list, and you are more than welcome to choose whichever photo.
All right,
but yeah, there was a series of injuries. I fractured. I really got lucky. I really did.
Hell yeah, you did.
I fractured the top part of my tibia, which is right behind my kneecap.
Yep.
And luckily, it was where the cup is on the top part of the bone. I shaved the entire front end off of my tibia.
Okay.
And so I did not need surgery.
Okay.
At the moment, at least. The doctors say maybe a couple years from now I will. But at the moment, you know, I did not. I was able to walk out 38 hours later.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, they were in shock, and so was I.
I was surprised. I mean, when I think Chris had texted me saying, "Hey, man, he's out," or Stu had texted whatever, and I'm like, "Get the hell out already, really?" So, and I was texting you from when I was in New York. I was like, "Dude, hope you're all right." But I think the most important thing for me is that, and maybe you can answer this then. So after that, during that 8 weeks, and after the 8 weeks, I mean, obviously you got a new bike again. We've already been out riding. Mm-hmm. I never asked you this. Like, did you miss what was that 8 weeks like? I mean. Because I think this is a kind of big picture
it's
discussion
a great question.
Right here.
It's a great question. Those 8 weeks were, it was a life changer.
You're also moving during that time.
Yeah, we were moving. Yeah, it was a big time life changer.
Yeah.
A lot of things going on. But I mean, for me personally, it was a life changer. I thought about what am I doing with my business? What am I doing with my life? What am I doing for my friends and for, you know, my loved ones and et cetera. And it made me realize that life is way too short. Don't sweat the small things, you know, whether it's with about a customer or about finances or about, you know, goals. You're going to have goals. You have hundreds of thousands of goals a day that you don't even realize that they're goals.
Right.
And so just make it a point to just enjoy yourself, live your life, and just have fun with it. And more importantly, always, always be there for somebody, because somebody was there for me at that time, whether they're physically there like Stu was,
spiritually whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Somebody or something was there. There actually was a person there that helped me and helped Stu calm me down, who ended up, the guy was going out for a run. Okay.
A complete stranger.
I don't know who he is. I do not recall his name.
Okay.
A complete stranger was on that road, and he is a trauma nurse.
Get the hell out.
And he...
I just
helped.
Got a chill. That's crazy, man.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
He helped basically keep me at bay. He, you know, helped calm me down, helped with the wounds until paramedics showed. He actually stayed until 1 a.m. in the ICU area with my wife.
I didn't realize he was there that whole time.
He was there that entire time.
Get the hell
out. Never seen that guy before in my entire life.
Okay.
Probably never see him again. I don't know. Yeah. And that was somebody.
And you never got to find out who that was?
Never got to find out who he was.
Dude, man. We got to track that guy down. That's awesome.
It's insane. And that, and like I said, I mean, I reflect on that and I sit here and say to myself, I try to give a lot, as you know, back to friends, family, and everybody and anybody. But I ask myself, am I doing enough?
Yeah.
Can I do more? How can I do more?
Well, I mean, that's... You and I have talked about this a lot too, and I'm always, if anything, you're always yelling at me that maybe I've given too much, and I need to focus more on the income generation part of the business stuff and everything else, because I think you and I are on two different sides there. Mm-hmm. You've done a great job. And I don't want to call it, some people call it being selfish. And
it goes back to exactly what we started out as. You got to be a little selfish for yourself.
You got to be a little selfish because are you doing enough for yourself to ensure you do have peace of mind and you are a little bit more stress-free because you've built your business or you've built your income streams to be able to survive so you can keep giving more to others?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what you and I talked the other night about. We were debriefing on that Thrive Make Money Matter event in San Diego last week and what I took away from that. And it all kind of gave me some more full circle stuff to what you and I are always talking about. And I think that's the most important thing for me is, like, I've always wanted to keep just give, love charity work, stuff like that. But are you putting too much into that and not enough into yourself and your business? And
if you don't give, you know, enough to yourself, how can you give back?
Yeah.
It's hard to.
Yeah. And if we do want to be able to give more, support more, whether it be financially, time, whatever, you have to have built something up to sustain everything along the way. So if I end up making, actually, it was great, a great quote from one of the speakers at the event said, listen, if you want to be a millionaire, then fine, don't make a million, make 2 million so you can give 1 million away.
Correct.
Great. Now you have purpose and you're still being successful. You can survive and you're also giving a lot back.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's all on how you think about that stuff.
Yep.
So for you, like, you had already been a little selfish. You've been building this business and things were going well, but it still made you think deeper about, hey, am I doing enough on the other side of that coin?
Yep. How can I do more?
All right.
You know, and it was an eye opener. I mean, those 8 to 10 weeks were an eye opener. I mean, if you think about it, I pretty much couldn't lift more than 35 pounds. And I had a plethora of people here to help me move from one house to another.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I want to do that again.
You know, and yeah, that wasn't. That
we was all wrong. Love your wife, but seriously, that moving company sucked. And a quick moving tip, people, they did what they could, but do not take a 600-pound wooden dresser from a bedroom and leave it fully stocked with clothing and everything else, saying it's easier to move it that way.
With your wife's clothing, is the top of
with your wife's clothing.
Sorry,
it was a 300-pound piece of furniture that turned into a 600-pound furniture. Is that what it was?
Yeah, sorry, babe.
Yeah, it's all right. But, you know, we're not ripping on her. We're just discussing moving tips. But, no, that was crazy. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. And, I mean, if you think about it, you know, my close network, my friends, my family, my loved ones, all were there, you know, to help me get through that.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise, I couldn't do it alone. And more important, I mean, bottom line is, you can't do everything alone. You need people.
Yep.
Surround yourself with the people that you want to be with and you want to help and you want to see succeed, and you will succeed as well.
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons why you and I are as close as we are. We're always trying to help each other succeed.
Oh, you're definitely one of my inner circle, man. Like, you've been a heavily amazing influence on my life. That's why I was like, I mean, you're one of the key people that helped kickstart the podcast for me. I've been talking about this forever, and you're like, dude, just freaking do it. So I did. So you obviously have helped me along the way there. And obviously, like I said, like, I had to make sure I got you on for at least one episode. You'll have to come on again down the road because we're going to need to bring in some more of the ball busting because, trust me, guys, there's way more stories behind the scenes from our friendship over the years.
Mm-hmm.
T-boning a deer like a jackass without me, that's a whole different story. Trust me, I've done plenty of stupid shit over the years that he's been there to see.
I mean,
I haven't killed a deer with a bike yet, though.
Going sledding down a sheet of ice on a, I don't even know what that was. That
Rich's front lawn.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how you want to go about it, but that was...
Yeah.
it was like 2 inches thick of ice. It was freezing rain. It was awesome.
Yep. And then I come in and I'm like, oh yeah, he could do it. I could do it. So I do it, and I come back with basically an Easter egg on my forehead.
I at least cut my wrist and everything open. Yep. So I mean, once somebody decided to break through the ice, we'll just say, people, it's like sledding for adults plus a little bit of wine plus a little ice storm and a very steep hill. Never grow up. That's all I'm going to say.
The best was when, you know, we're all talking about doing it. Next thing you know, you just silently stop and pick up the inner tube.
Because you guys kept talking.
And you
I'm
just say, peace out. And all you hear is, whoosh.
We were standing right by a key drop-in point. It was epic, man, because that speed you picked up right there at that first part, I mean, it was awesome. And you can clear the driveway.
It was.
That was the goal.
Just the fact that, you know, that what's past the driveway is a massive embankment that has trees
and stuff and trees. I hit the brakes before then.
There were no brakes other than falling off.
That counted. So you just tuck and roll.
Yeah. Tuck and slide and hope to God you stop.
Listen, guys, I mean, you know from Live the Fuel that if you're following me more and more, you'll notice that I do a lot of silly, stupid shit, and it's all about living life a little bit and having some adventures. So, like I said, Simone's definitely seen a few of those, my jackass moments over the years. So, and I've seen a few of his own as well, Mr. Pancreas on a wooden bridge mountain biking.
Yes.
I think that was a pancreas, wasn't it?
No, it was my...
Spleen? That was a spleen shot?
Yeah.
All right, sorry, my bad. Yep. So... I know you got some stuff to do, and we need to follow up in a future episode. I just want to give as much light to Singularis and everything that you're doing for businesses out there, because I think it's pretty powerful. And in this online space, anything is possible, and I'm always trying to inspire that to people I talk to. So just the fact that you, from a technology standpoint and a services standpoint, can actually help people from small business platforms like I am to large Fortune 500, it's pretty cool. It's awesome to see how you're actually scaling things for real in real life to fit people's actual needs, not just overbilling them and just, you know, helping them flush their entire budget down the drain, so to speak.
Yeah, no, it's got to be fair business. You know, and the right business.
And plus, like I said, you've been there for me, man, and, you know, I'll always be there for you. So I like to close out the shows, which, again, we already just talked about some ridiculous shit that we, a few adrenaline junkie moments there, but you already mentioned a couple of key messages, I think, that are important for people to live by. And I always like to have people exit with that note anyway. So you kind of already hinted on that. But out of those couple you mentioned, like, what is the one that I guess you would like to stand out most to people as a closing note from you, whether it be that near-death experience or that message? I know you're very good with family. So.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, take care of people you love. You know, surround yourself with the people you love. Surround yourself with the people that you want to be with and help succeed, and you will ultimately succeed without no questions asked.
That's awesome, man. Awesome. Well, okay, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. This has been a long time coming for me. I know it's only been, I don't know, we're still just shy of 25 episodes. We're just over 2 months old, this show. I wanted to get Simone on sooner rather than later because he's a key player that helped me get this going. His stories are just the tip of the iceberg. So if you guys get a chance, check out SingularisIT.com. If you know anybody looking for help, he is your man. He is everywhere on social media, on Facebook. He's on Twitter at SingularisIT as well. So, and we're working on your LinkedIn existence as well. That's a whole side conversation. But again, guys, that's another Live the Fuel episode. I hope you really enjoyed getting to understand more about Simone Dorgum and Singularis IT today, and a little bit of deer killing with road bikes and some ridiculous ice sledding moments. And there's many more stories out there. So thanks for listening in. And remember, guys, if these stories haven't inspired you just a little bit, please listen to future episodes. Give us a review on iTunes. Check out all of our past episodes and more to come. Keep living the fired up epic life, guys. This is what life's all about. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you for listening to Live the Fuel. Visit us at livethefuel.com. Stay connected on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more at Live the Fuel. Live the fired up epic life. Hashtag Live the Fuel.